Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hey!
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Yo, yo, yo!
And Bryce Castillo.
Hello, everybody.
All right. Studio, tell us about the studio. When do you move in? It's going to be, what, a year from now? You're going to be in there?
Oh, man, it feels like that.
A year ago.
I mean, when we bought the place a year ago, you wouldn't think it's going to take over a year before you can just move some computers in here and get started. But guess what? It took over a year. Mm-hmm. But the good news is we moved some computers in here and we got started.
That's right. So over the weekend, over across two kind of heavy days, I was in here putting this old bad boy together. I've got this time lapse that we'll figure out a way to publish somewhere. But yeah, it was a thing, you know. My goal in setting the studio up over the weekend was, what can I do for free and cheap and right now to get us back to where we were at in Brian's house?
So like just back to functionality,
right?
Fidelity be damned, the potential down the road be damned. Let's just make sure that we're able to show up on Monday and make another podcast.
Well, and fidelity was a secondary goal, because I think it does sound a little different today than it was last week, but overall pretty good. There's a lot of cleanup behind the scenes in terms of the audio setup. Some stuff has been simplified, some stuff has gotten more complicated. And because we're in a different space, how we handle, you know, things like our studio monitors is different. You know, we have less video monitors in here than we normally do. So, you know, Brian is able to see like one third of the things that he normally sees, and it's much smaller also. But overall, I'm really happy with it. I mean, Brian, you're the one who just did an hour of a podcast. I mean, how did you feel?
Yeah, well, I'll be interested. I mean, the biggest thing, I don't know if we want to flash the disastrous cable porn on the back of this thing. I am curious how we're going to cover up all of these cables for some kind of cable management, because I don't see it being possible for us to zip tie all these together, especially because we're constantly reconfiguring stuff. Right. That's just going to be a disaster in the making.
Actually, I think the boys got back from a shopping expedition probably within the past hour, hopefully to get some hooks to help kind of clean it up. We've got three computers and a mixer all pouring cords into the same space. And actually, most of these cords are Velcroed up and spooled a little bit. So,
I mean, it just looks like picture a bowl of black spaghetti, and that's what it is. Like, yes. Just all down the back of this thing.
And again, that was like, I need to get this done and working before bothering to make the thing no one's going to look at except you and I.
Yeah,
look nice. So,
what do you think we'll do? Like right now, we have functional lighting. But my guess is that there's a level of expertise beyond even both of us put together on lighting, pro level lighting. Should we hire a lighting person to install a light grid and figure out
lighting technology? Oh, okay. We have a very standard, very nice light setup on you today.
Sure, sure. But also like everything from establishing. Like right now, we just have gels taped over lights in the back, and it seems like we would be able to have stuff that would be configurable with LEDs that could swap and, more precise halos and fill lights underneath and all that stuff, which is all above my pay grade. But I feel like we have lots of space, but we need to light everything to sort of reflect that and to bring out the most of that.
Yeah.
Right now, what we're doing is basically recreating what we had at the other place, which was our decision because we wanted to start with what was familiar and then be able to grow out from there.
Oh, totally. And I think that lighting is something that you're going to eventually look into. I think portraying a bigger like space, you know, being tight when you need to be tight, but then being able to demonstrate the room that you have to work with is certainly going to be a part of that. But, you know, right now, I think your next step is figuring out exactly what you want to do with that space, right? Like, or at least like for a year, like just drawing, you know, letting down tape and saying like, all right, this is going to be podcast space. And we want to make sure that we have that big enough for things that were like cramped, but now we can draw a solution from scratch from for like, all right, what if 4 people are there? What if 5 people are there?
Right.
What if we have an audience of 4 people, 10 people?
What if we want to do something that reads like a television, late night television style interview with somebody as a guest and they're being interviewed and so on?
Exactly. What if, I mean, do you want to go with, TV head in the box? So there is like a physical set that everybody's being brought into and the remote folks are there that we can always, you know, fade from that to our actual shot. But I mean, these are the questions that, to be honest, it's like now I know, you know, when you find yourself out getting lunch at, you know, some of the places around your house and you look up and you see all the, especially midday, if you're at a sports bar, the only thing that they're showing are radio simulcasts on television. And the good news is that now there's a lot of people that have been paid a lot of money to do a lot of work to solve exactly the problem, or not the problem, but the ability to build up an audio first medium into something visually dynamic. And that's, look, there's a lot there. You know, there's a lot that you get you have an opportunity to figure out now.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that will come out of, you know, us sitting down and talking off air about which of those things is important to us. Because, I mean, if I had my druthers, hey, this is working just fine. But I know it's a lot of space and we can do a lot of stuff with it. And it would be good to take advantage of it as much as we can, while also trying to be economical about it and working with the technology we've got.
Certainly, like to Bryce's point, having a clear idea of what you want to do next is, you can bring in a lighting designer that can set up something for you and you can pay for that, but then where you want to grow next and what you want to do, it may or not be that, you know. Like, do you want to do a green screen setup next? Do you want to do a, a table interview set or something like that? I think if you know specifically what you want to do next, then it makes sense. But, you know, otherwise you're going to have somebody redo it every time.
It is amazing to me how much the perception of value with a green screen has changed over the last 10 or 12 years. Because I remember when I first went to Revision 3, that was a big selling point. Like, look at this, we have a green screen, and nothing screamed high production quality like a green screen. And now it means, oh, you're in your parents' basement and you're playing games on Twitch.
When done poorly.
Well, but regardless of whether it's done poorly or not, it doesn't convey the social proof of, like, there are certain sets. Like, you look at those daytime sports shows, there are certain sets. Like, you look at Sports Nation, you can't do that on a green screen, right? It's like, that is, well, money being spent.
Around the Horn, which is a huge part of ESPN's block, like, is 50-50, like, green screen physical set. They've got, you know, they're the biggest that I've seen where it's very obviously based on the fact that they have these what used to be physical monitor casings, and now they kind of float around and shuffle and disappear and everything. Like, there are, I think, yes, now there it is so prevalent that you certainly have more of a proliferation of low-end green screen, but at the high end, it's insane. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the reason you would see on ESPN shows and stuff, they would use physical sets because the cameras were moving. You know, when they weren't doing lockdown shots and the cameras were moving, that's when you use the physical set. Because back then, trying to do a tracking green screen shot for a live thing was just not practical. Now it is, and so you see the hybrid sets, and, like, you know, most of what you do, your cameras aren't moving, and so it's you could be in a green screen for all I know right now. So
right.
Yeah, I think you know, look, there's a lot that you can do there. Even if you look at like, okay, do we want to have different sets? Like, do we want to be able to go? Are we shooting two-shot Modern Rogue episodes that you're effectively going to shoot on that set, right? But do you want that to be on the BB logo with the same thing as Night Attack? Do you want weird things to be on the same set as Night Attack? There's just a lot of really cool options that you have right now. And I would say for the next couple weeks, like, number one, get the trauma of moving and, like, everything kind of getting settled for now out of the way. And then start to look at, like, ooh, you want to know what would be cool is if we did X, Y, or Z and let some of the demands of the shows that you're doing sort of dictate that. Like tonight, you guys are going to do the movie draft with Mike TV. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, because you used to just be in a tiny room, Mike TV would just sit right next to Brian and play his songs. Does Mike TV or Musical Guest, is that worth getting another set? And right now, so you've set him up on a black screen here. Yeah. Like, is there a more permanent version of that? Is there another, you know, what do you want to do to build that out? Like, that's the kind of stuff that I think is going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what you guys do. And one of my favorite things was, remember watching Letterman back in the early days? And they're like, how he would figure out, how do we use this soundstage? How do we use this thing in a different way? And maybe they'll be on the roof dropping watermelons, you know, or maybe we're going to put our own little cheapo camera to fly over that. I mean, I think there's a lot of neat things that once you just start saying, you get to do it however you want.
Yeah. And I think back to kind of the core things we talk about on After Things, it's better to just hit the ground running and start doing and then note as you go along, like, oh, it'd be nice if we had this. Oh, we, you know, down the road should take care of this. Here's a problem that we didn't realize would be happening often. But all of that begins not by sitting down and imagining the perfect version of everything, but by actually getting started. And as we all know, oftentimes the thing that you're convinced will be a big problem turns out not to be a big problem. And the thing that you never even considered turns out that's the one that you really have to address.
Though, you know, I think we're in such open waters that it wouldn't hurt to have a little bit more of a heading in that way. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, but again, you need to know kind of the shape of it. And like right now, like literally today is the first time that you guys are really getting the shape of, and you're going to tonight get the shape of like, okay, what is this with Mike on another set? What is this with Brian right here? You've already troubleshot two or three different things with audio. As you kind of run through a week, maybe two of that and can process like, okay, going forward, what's the coolest thing we can do? How do we make this look even better? How do we bring up those production values? And that's where, and I think to Andrew's point, like when you get to the idea of like, oh, okay, well, really, no matter what, no matter how close we put these gel lights, where or how we angle them, we're only going to be able to get X level of lighting. Where if we did get a super pro lighting rig, now the setup's going to be faster, it's going to be a lot more dynamic, and we just have other options to it. Like that's where those decisions I think are appropriate.
We live in a really exciting age, just with the way like light panels are so cheap now. Like I had last night I needed to do a little side light, and I had like a $30 like light panel that I bought the same exact thing 12 years ago for like $1,000. And you know, the ability to light stuff inexpensively and, you know, leave these things up longer is great. You know, so, you know, that's just a ring light and then some specialty light on the other side. But like I had another little small light panel brick. And so like you have the big panels, things like that. You can go buy, you know, you've already got some great stuff there. So that's the cool thing is it's just, and, you know, some C stands and some light panels, you can do a lot of things and figure out what you like and then figure out how to make it permanent.
Yeah.
But you guys know what you're doing. So I'm excited. I'm just really excited to see what happens out of there. Mm-hmm. It's like the Children's Television Workshop, but for like older delinquents or something.
The Older Delinquents Workshop.
Yeah. So, man, like, I'm a sucker. Like, I am, there's like, I'm like, ah, you know, I think about everything I consume and I do, and I put a tip of attention to it. But then you hit a couple triggers, and all of a sudden somebody just addresses some sort of thing, and I'm like already clicking buy. And I heard about a company, and I heard the name of the company. I was listening to some tech show. They're talking about it. I didn't know what they were. And once they described what they did, I'm like within a minute buying this.
Okay.
You're like, Andrew, what did you buy? I bought cereal for Magic Spoon. You heard about this?
No.
So who here like still likes breakfast cereal?
I mean, I do when I allow myself to have it. It's straight up
forgetting
sugar.
The calories inside, do you like it? Forgetting the calories.
Love it. Are you kidding
like,
me? Cocoa Dynabites for the win. Yeah.
So Magic Spoon was like some adults who said, hey, we like cereal, but maybe we could re-engineer cereal. Maybe we could make it healthy. Maybe we could add the protein. Maybe we could lower the sugar, but maybe we can give you the same flavor that you had when you were a kid. I have no idea if it's good or not. I have no idea. I get some in a couple days. But the fact that some people said, because like I would get cereal like you, Brian, but I'm like, I can't justify sitting there eating, you know, a bowl of, you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Because it's just sugar on flour. But apparently, they've got a lower-calorie cereal that's nutritious for you. Much like Soylent or whatever, these people said, we're going to try to re-engineer cereal for adults.
Wow.
And they have flavors like
so
fruity.
So for the
like,
sweetener, like, are they doing like sucralose in there? Or what are they doing to...
I forget which one they're doing. Bryce, you can see the sweetener. They're using some other natural sort of sweetener that's got a lower calorie content but tastes really good. And
that says so. Low sugar, nothing artificial. Here we go. Milk protein blend, coconut oil, natural sweetener blend with monk fruit, stevia, and allulose, tapioca flour, chicory root fiber, natural flavors, and salt.
How many calories do they do a comparison of like your
yeah, they
Lucky
have
Charms
the
versus
111 calories.
And they do a comparison, I think, the us versus them, too. Yeah.
So proteins, very high in protein, very low in carbs compared to both the fruitier and sweeter cereals, as well as things like Frosted Flakes or Special K with protein. Huh. Brian, as a food guy, does this work?
Yeah, I don't know how much value I put on grain-free or gluten-free, but sure. Certainly protein over carbs is good news. And I'll buy that. I'll literally buy it. I too will join your experiments.
Because we have this desire for cereal, but we won't let ourselves have it because of that. We look at the back of the label and we go, ugh. And so I brought this up because like... my problem had been, I like cereal, but I do not eat cereal because of that. And these people went out there and we'll see if it's good. It's way more expensive than regular cereal. But, you know, I love the fact that they looked at a desire and a need, and it's a simple one. Adults who want to eat breakfast cereal and then said, well, we can solve that, or we think we have a solution for it. You know, we're not telling anybody else to buy this. We have no idea if it's good or not. We'll give you an update on that. But for talking to creatives and people out there looking to solve a problem, I heard about this on a tech show. Is this tech? Well, it's food tech. You know, it's food tech. And it's,
yeah.
You know, some people sitting down figuring out how do we do this. And, you know, you look at how Soylent came out. And Soylent, you know, the story of Gatorade is amazing because it's like, you know, university trying to come up with a perfect drink. But then Soylent was just sort of like, you know, some dude's like, man, I don't want to go out and get food. I want a simple solution. Now it's a big brand. And now we've got Magic Spoon, which is, you know, we'll see where it goes.
It's just kind of amazing how stuff like this can come to market so fast. And the internet disrupted all kind of supply stuff to the point where there is now such a market that literally, you know, Andrew can hear it on a podcast and buy it and then talk about it on a podcast. And now Brian's buying it. Whereas before, if you were going to do all the R&D and all the sourcing and all the branding and everything that would go into making something like that before, it would be like, are we going to be able to battle General Mills for like space in grocery stores? Are we going to have to get a small order first to fund us? Like we're looking at a 6-year run-up period, and that's if we sell really well. But now it's like, hey, look, we're doing cereal. Buy it on the internet. It's just, I mean, I know that's kind of a redundant, you know, point, but it's kind of amazing.
There is one eyebrow-raising moment, and that's when I go to click on Coco, and it says, quantity one, $39.
Very expensive, it seems. But I think you're buying four boxes at once.
Yeah,
four
no, it does. It does say $1.39 per bowl.
That's still $10 a box of cereal.
That's some cash. That's but some cash.
It is a new thing. It's trying to be a good thing. So I understand. Like, I think if it's going to be online only, if it's, you know, not on grocery stores, if it's not having to fight for shelf space.
Man, I was going to get. I wanted to get the cocoa and the cinnamon. Now the all variety. Of a sudden, I'm in for $100.
Get the variety. They got a 4-pack.
Yeah.
But then I have to get the fruity one.
I'll take the fruity one.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe I could pawn off the fruity one on the kids.
Hmm. Bryce just asked for the fruity one.
Yeah, why are you denying Bryce the fruity one?
Well, I was like, I'll eat the fruity one. Brian's like, maybe I could. Maybe the raccoons.
I didn't hear. I didn't hear because Bryce is not on the monitor, so I didn't know he said that.
No, I'd take it. I do like that they have basically boiled down all cereals to the four flavors of cinnamon, frosted, fruity, and cocoa. No marshmallow, though. They need a marshmallow.
Well, it's pretty hard to do protein marshmallows. They can be considering sugar. Just straight up sugar.
Why we say that, but we don't. There could be I eat vegan or vegetarian a couple times a week because they do pretty good. Like, I had a buffalo chicken sandwich that was with chicken with the ends with a K or whatever it is. I don't know what it was. It was good, though. Somebody could come up with a marshmallow. Bryce could come up with the marshmallow.
Yeah, get on that, Bryce. Yeah. What are you doing working on the studio? We needed a protein marshmallow. All right, I just ordered some.
Take it from somebody who eats with a vegan all the time. Buffalo chicken is pretty good in the vegan world because buffalo sauce is effectively vegan, and the fake chicken, which is not my favorite of the like replacement meats, the one thing that it is so spongy that it just like sops up every. If you like buffalo sauce, like vegan stuff with that is pretty good.
Yeah. So, anyhow, I brought this up because the point I was saying earlier is that, hey, like, you know, we often we're looking for opportunities and things we can go do, and food tech is a very interesting area. And we could be in a universe where another 5 years went by or 10 years went by where nobody even bothered thinking about, well, how do I re-engineer children's breakfast cereal? We'll see if Magic Spoon works or not. I know if this works and I don't feel like I'm putting on weight, like I see myself probably buying a lot of this stuff because I have the taste palate of a 10-year-old.
Yeah, I believe I'm going to bet it will taste pretty good because when I was doing the weight training, I would do those kind of vanilla flavored protein shakes. And I know everybody likes to wrinkle their nose at protein shakes, but it tasted like candy to me, like a milkshake.
Yeah, I would even, like, Soylent, sometimes I'd mix a little bit of the, like, artificial sweetener in there that added, like, maybe 5 calories to it, and it was, like, a treat, you know? It was like a milkshake. Lucky me, you know? So, I don't know. I just thought that was, hey, novel and cool. So, any picks?
Yeah, I got a pick. Hey, I saw the movie Hustlers over the weekend. Y'all know about this movie, Hustlers?
Nope.
Yep.
Yeah, it's got J-Lo and Cardi B's in it, right?
So Cardi B and Lizzo are I think they're in it for the legally appropriate amount of time to be put on the poster and have them Instagram about it. it is a movie version of an article called Hustlers at Scores, or The Hustlers at Scores, which came out a few years ago, and it was about a group of women who were former strippers that began meeting men at bars, drugging them, taking them to strip clubs where they got a cut, running up their credit cards almost to maximum, and then putting them in a cab and having them go home. And even though the plan eventually falls through, there were so few men that would admit to it that they wound up getting away with it for a comically long amount of time.
Oh, wow.
The movie's good. It is a fairly straight ahead kind of gangster tale told from a perspective you don't normally hear about. J-Lo is, it's one of those like star performances. Like you don't know if it's the most challenging acting in the world, but you know, every time she shows up on screen, it means something. And Constance Wu, who was last, I think her biggest role prior to this was in Crazy Rich Asians, where I thought she was a cardboard cutout. She's good in this. She's really the main character, and you kind of see an arc there. I will say, after seeing the movie, I read the article, and they sand some edges to the plan. This could have been a far darker movie than it winds up being. And although they don't really pull any punches on whether or not the girls are doing a bad thing, there certainly is a few details that if they had put it into the movie, you'd be like, oh wow, these women are like bad for reasons that kind of go beyond getting back at, you know, these Wall Street guys.
Yeah, that was I knew about the backstory, and then I saw the trailer and like, oh, these Wall Street guys. And I'm like, you're having one group of awful people here who are maybe victimizing people who actually aren't as awful as you just said they were. And it's like Pain and Gain, where you're like, those were horrible, horrible, horrible people. And how am I going to, you know, so I'm glad you like it. But yeah, it's one of these things where it's like, this is not this from the trailer. I'm like, these were really bad people. These were really, really awful people.
And, you know, ironically, I think the magazine article does a better job, although like the exact line is in the movie, to kind of explain, sort of the symbiosis that these women kind of feel with the Wall Street folks. So, look, I would say it is not quite the moral study that that I might want from something like this. But in general, it is if you can get around the idea that like, hey, look, this is a gangster movie. You don't watch Goodfellas and wonder whether or not they are good guys. You are rolling with them while they are making horrendous decisions morally. And I would say, look at it like that. I don't know if it stands up as like the like girls got to stick together, girl power kind of thing that it's marketed as. But I don't really think that the movie thinks that either.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, so I mentioned this over in the show proper, Weird Things, but Infinity Train was great. Watched all 10 episodes of it. They're available. I don't know. I think I watched them on demand through the Cartoon Network app.
It was only 10 episodes?
Yeah. It's very short. I watched the whole thing in like maybe 3 hours or so. It was adorable and then got surprisingly in-depth. Like, there's a whole episode that's only about the 13-year-old kid revisiting various versions of her memory of when her parents told her they were getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. And it's very believable. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. Highly recommended. Infinity Train.
Yeah. I got a pick. I got another Apple Arcade pick.
Go!
This really interesting game called Over the Alps. It is a story-based game that takes place all via postcards. So you're in Switzerland in the 30s, right on the eve of World War II, and you are an English spy, and you don't quite know why you're there, and you don't even really get a good explanation of how the game works or why, but you're taken through these written prompts, and then you're given different like ways that you can handle any scene. So there are like these stamps, and so like the little cat stamp is like if you want to be the sly person, you can. There's a disguise one if you want to be a little sneakier. There's a hatchet if you want to be the real like aggressive kind of guy. It's neat. It's a really neat game, and there are not a lot of games that could do a narrative game like this where they don't tell you the mechanics of the game. That are successful in the way that this is. Plus, it really is gorgeous. All of the different little set pieces that each little town or village is in, they're really nice. When you move your phone,
it's like a Wes Anderson game.
Yeah, because they're all styled like travel posters, almost like with the very basic coloring and all. And when you move your phone around, like the backgrounds shift and all, so it's like you're actually looking in a little diorama.
The art style is reminiscent of those Google Doodles. This kind of stylized thing.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Very easy to play. Just read and you make choices. And it has a lot of like detail in it. It knows, when if you got a gun, if you've been captured by the police before, who you make friends and enemies with. So that's Over the Alps. I think it's only on Apple Arcade right now. But check it out. Very, very cool game.
I'm in love with, the idea of creating platforms to make it easier for. I mean, you have that. We have like Steam and stuff are great, but discoverability is a problem. And you have like, there are some such amazing game developers and people out there just doing wonderful, wonderful things. It's hard to get a bigger platform and get attention to stuff. And I love that like a thing like this gets to exist and be there. And you sit there and you think about like, as games become a bigger part of our life and what a game means going beyond just a first person shooter and stuff, I'm just thinking like, what is it going to be like 80 years from now? Completing the eighth grade going to be like, you're going to do, some version of Call of Duty and you're going to do some other like, four different games kind of thing.
I'll tell you what, man, highly recommended. My kid, forget my other pick. This is my real pick. My 6-year-old started playing this game for class called Prodigy. And I got sucked in watching that thing, man. It's a full-on, looks like Final Fantasy, right down to the type of gameplay. The only thing it does is add in, when you cast your spell, you just have to do a real quick math problem to get it to happen. But, like, she starts off as this little blonde-haired little girl, whatever the name of the character was. I come back 6 hours later. She's got like badass armor. She's got a flaming sword, traveling on a floating cloud and stuff. It's fantastic, man. Highly recommended.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Educational.
Years ago, we talked about Dragon Eggs, which is a game that taught algebra, and it's fun. Dragon Box. Yeah. And that's just, now the scene where we are now. And that's exciting. The problem is, you're going to get, we've all seen a lot of really crap educational games and stuff, a lot of real crap. And that's been one of the biggest detriments is that anybody with, Unity or whatever and who could talk to an educator or some school system could come up with something and say, we made a thing. And having that standard of knowing what's good or what's bad, and it's been holding back the exceptional and neat. And so I'm overall excited because I think we're going to reach a point of just super fast acceleration of really coming up with great stuff.
Yeah. Individually, every member of the family got hypnotized just watching Callie play this game. And each of us, said we wish that we had it when we were younger. She spent the whole weekend long doing math and loving it. I mean, it was remarkable.
That's awesome. My pick, again, I'll double down to just Apple Arcade. Cool. But any of you been watching Carnival Row?
Mm-mm. No. Mm-mm.
This is a new Amazon show, right? I see ads for it.
Amazon series stars Orlando Bloom and Cara Delevingne. And the premise is that it's this alternate timeline, alternate world, but it feels a lot like maybe late 1800s, or 1900 sort of our timeline. But in this world, there was this other land where fairies and centaurs and all these other creatures were real, and then we find it, and then we fight, basically there's we fight different groups, fight over for control of this land, and then basically one group that loses control, the people from a place called the Burge lose, and they go back to like what kind of feels like England, but there's some immigration of fairies and pixies and other people from this land to there, and they're treated like second-class citizens. And it's sort of set in this very, very well-thought-out world. Orlando Bloom plays a guy who was a soldier over in this war, came back, and now he's a police investigator who does a lot of investigates a lot of crimes involving, you know, the pixie people, or Critch is what they call these creatures. And so part of it tells stories, you know, taking place in that time period, but then they have flashbacks to the war he fought in, et cetera. It is extremely well-developed world. I was hesitant to get into it because a lot of time, like, fantasy stuff can be hit or miss, as you, the visuals are great and the story sort of sucks. I read some criticisms of people like, what's it about, whatever. Like, I don't know. It doesn't have like a big grand Game of Thrones sort of thing right now. It's more sort of on a smaller scale. There is a big mystery being revealed and there's power players involved, but it's really a lot about their relationship and this sort of world building. I'm enjoying it. I'm like halfway through, four episodes in, and I'm really enjoying this. And I thought I would be the last person to like it.
Cool.
So, Carnival Row. Cool. Big congrats on the studio, guys. That is a lot of work. That is a lot of work. And I am very, very impressed by what you've done.
You Dude, know. We're excited. The story will continue to unfold.
Yeah. I'm a guy that can't even find an HDMI cable on my desk here. So look at what you've done there. I'm like, you know, I feel like, you know, I don't know, like how some Pacific Islander must have felt when, like, you know, a big battleship showed up or something like this, you know, like, how is this how possible? So cool. It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.